Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. If they ain't biting, you got to catch them with content. So visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom content needs. Guys, today's conversation is with a gentleman named Greg Chambers. Greg is a delight. I'm going to tell you, this is one of my favorite podcasts. He is someone who is extremely sharp, has really cool real-world experiences, even goes on to share a little bit of one of his failures that makes him better with all of his consulting gigs today. He can be found at chamberspivot.com. That's his name of his company is Chambers Pivot Industries. He's written a book called The Human Being's Guide to Business Growth, a simple three-step process for unleashing the power of your people for growth. But the conversation wasn't just about that. It was about how we get things going in our world and how we find, as he likes to call it, a fit for growth and for change. He's clearly an expert in the sales field and understands that sales has changed in some respects, but the decisions have not really changed. It's just that our buyers, our target clients, have this feeling that they can do it all by themselves. And I think that's probably the most remarkable thing that he talks about. So I'm really, really excited for you to hear this. Again, this is Greg Chambers from Chambers Pivot Industries, and I think you're going to love this conversation. So without further ado, here's a little bit of an excerpt with my conversation with Greg. Enjoy. Greg.
Is this Mark?
This is him. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Are you in beautiful Omaha, Nebraska?
Out here in the middle, and the sun is shining today, so that's good.
That's good. I mean, that's
yeah.
You say that like you're surprised. Doesn't it shine there all the time?
Not all the time, no. I don't know, we're right. We're right kind of on that line where the weather never seems to be great. But we'll say this is close to a Chamber of Commerce day, so if you were coming through, you would... You would feel good about, there's still some color on the trees and it's not too windy and the temperature's just about right.
Did you grow up there?
I did not. I grew up in Denver, but we've been out here for 20 some years, so I can say I've been here longer as a conscious adult than I was in Denver. So
All right. I was gonna ask you if how far is it from Lincoln?
About 45 minutes, about 40 miles or so.
All right, so are you or your family related to the Huskers in any way?
Not really. My wife is from, actually grew up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So,
oh, wow.
We're both kind of NFL city kids.
All right.
And when we first got here, the Huskers were dominating everything, and it was almost too much.
Yeah.
It's been a little easier probably to become a little bit more of a fan as they've been suffering the last couple of years.
They have suffered. They really have.
They have. And so you start to feel for them, and I'm like, I can almost see myself becoming a fan. So.
Yeah. I was just up in Wisconsin. I was this past weekend. I was up in Madison.
Oh, you were. Isn't that great?
It is unbelievable. I mean, yeah. It is. I mean, I want to go back to college, and I want to go to Madison.
Right. Were you there for something at college?
Yeah, my daughter and I went up and watched a hockey game, and yeah, it was really, really cool. And my daughter plays hockey. Both my kids play hockey, and so we're always taking in some different places. We knew somebody up there, and it was really, really cool.
Very cool. So you're a northerner.
So we live in Pittsburgh. Yeah, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and we live in Pittsburgh. And although we just moved here, we've been all over the place. Kids were born in California, and you know, we've been nomads for the last few years, but this has been this is going to be home for a while. We're really happy to be here, so it's pretty cool.
Well, good.
Yeah. So I appreciate you doing this and taking some time. I know that we've been fortunate enough to have you weigh in and do a little writing, and you know, I thought I was really looking forward to this, and I think the listeners, you know, of our little podcast will like it too, because not only do you engage, you've engaged, look, you know, based on what I've read and see, I mean, you've engaged on so many different levels and platforms. I mean, you've written books and you're consulting for organizations, but you're obviously knee deep in the sales side of thing. And just to give you kind of the 411, you know, on this world, obviously, you know, the printing industry has done this over the last 10, 15 years, really, really adapted and started to do more marketing services type things. And so, but they still use a lot of traditional sales models. So, you know, I thought it would be, you know, it'd be really fun to talk to you about, you know, what you see within the sales world, what you see. I mean, obviously you're consulting for a lot of different organizations, and then, you know, obviously want you to talk a little bit about your book, The Human Being's Guide to Business Growth. I think that's really, really cool. So I hope I won't badger you with too many questions, but I thought it would be cool to kind of get your take.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm happy to share.
So give me, so tell me, I mean, right now, I mean, I assume you spend most of your time doing a lot of consulting and with various people, various companies?
Yeah, multiple industries, mostly just if companies are working on growth, right. That's usually how we get in touch.
Okay.
And then from there we move to to whatever it is that is ailing them.
Well, what ails them, Greg? I mean, what's ailing everybody?
You know, a lot of what the ailing is it's there's such a press with all the technological shifts that are going on.
Yeah.
That there's this press for, we want to do that too, right? Because there's all these shiny objects that are out there. And I find myself trying to rein everybody in into, you know, we really need to get our blocking and tackling down so that we can employ all that technology. But if you go out and you're just trying to employ the technology, what ends up often happening is that the only people who know how to use the technology are the technology companies.
Right.
And they say, you know what, this is the best practice on the way to use it, and that may or may not be the best practice that works for that company.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they come in and they say, this is how we think you should do things like content marketing and drip, you know, and it's not bad advice.
Right.
But when it goes down into is our organization set up to do this, and as a matter of fact, have we done anything like this?
Right.
Before that, that's where we find the disconnect starts to happen. And any time that you try to force a best practice on the unsuspecting employees in your company, that's where, right, that little deflection can take place where everybody agrees with you and they're shaking their head yes, and then they go right back to their desk and they kind of do whatever it was they were doing before. And then usually that's when I would get a call. And
well,
they'd say, you know stuff about that, or you know about this stuff, can you help us?
Right.
And we end up going all the way back to strategy.
Well, and I think that's the big, I mean, you know, it's funny you say that because that's a big deal within our industry, right? You've got...
Oh, that, right. You've got so much technology.
Yeah, not only is there, I mean, look, it used to be we're selling what we call offset lithography, these big Heidelberg-esque type, you know, presses, and then it got to the digital world where they're doing, you know, some of the larger organizations come out with these digital presses, but now there's wide format, and then they're selling fulfillment stuff, and they're doing ad specialty items, and they're selling design services and marketing automation, and there's this move, if you will, from, hey, you know, the world's pushing us towards this. We used to be a print service provider. Now we're really doing all kinds of marketing services, so we're like a marketing service provider, but we're still using the same Salesforce. So when you say, you know, I go back to, right, you know, there's that disconnect, like, hey, I want you to sell this other stuff. I want you to have a deeper, more meaningful conversation with different levels of the organizations you're calling on, and yet you've got not only do you have sales models, but you have sales people who are like, yeah, that sounds great. I'm going to go back to selling print.
Right. How many catalogs, right?
Yeah. And that's where I pay my mortgage. And so,
yeah, exactly.
And so that's kind of the disconnect, right? I mean, that's an example of it, right?
Yeah. You've just described it. That's exactly what ends up happening, right? Is it's, we'd like to do this, right? So strategically we've kind of picked this direction, and then here's some things, some best practices that we can use that other people are using, so we can do this too. Mm-hmm. But you never get the buy-in from the bottom.
Yeah.
Where it's, this is how you're doing business now, and what are some ways that we can take you along this journey, because this is where we're going, right? So we're going to kind of flip that conversation. Instead of trying to force feed, we're trying to enlighten, right, and show this is the promised land that we're going to, and these are the steps that we're going to take along the way. Yeah, and unfortunately, there's always going to be a little bit of pushback, especially with old school sales guys.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, is the recipe for success, you know, a combination of, hey, let's nurture their individual growth and understanding of this, and do you also have to recognize that, look, there are some people just not going to get it, or for a variety of reasons, and so we got to bring in, you know, some new thinkers or some new people. I mean, do you look for those combinations?
We do. Yeah, we try to draw out the organization of the future, right? So we can start at that executive level and say, this is who we're going to need on board at the time, right? This is where we think the world will be, and this will be where we'll add value. And so these are the people that we need on board at that time. And then when you look back at who do we have today, some people have the capacity. Some people are there already, right? Mm-hmm. They get it. They've kept themselves up on things, and they've just been waiting for the opportunity. So they're going to come right along.
Yeah.
Others just need training, nurturing, right? And so we can bring them along. Others are going to not make it, mm-hmm. and then there will be some that the role actually won't change all that much.
Right.
As far as they're concerned, they just may see the organization kind of moving with them. And so I think of like there's some graphic artists, you know, where I had the ear of everybody along the way because I was such an integral part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the future organization, boy, you know, I'm kind of stuffed in the back room and working on different projects, and I don't feel like I'm as a big a part of things.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have to deal with that, but there's still a valued role for them in the organization. It's just, it changes a little bit.
Yeah.
As you get more consultative, especially if you're trying to sell these services, right? That's a little more wide open than pulling out, you know, samples of the things that you've done before.
Yeah.
Where you really got to dig into, okay, you, a potential customer, what is it you're trying to do? And then let me try to layer in all the things that we can do.
Yeah.
To help you get there.
And so, obviously you talk about these organizations that are not just, you know, you call it growth, but in a lot of ways that, you know, their growth depends on adapting and morphing to the changing environment. So that's been the only constant over the course of the last couple of decades, is that there's just constant change when you've got all this technological, every day is a new deal. And so, how have you seen, the buying landscape change? And I, more specifically, you know, I say that because, you know, sales has changed so much. And so rather than talk about how has sales changed, you know, maybe it's, hey, how has the buyer changed, and how does that impact how we sell?
Yeah. One way that I think about this is I think of it as the way people make decisions and the way organizations make decisions has not changed all that much as far as the steps. I just got a Gartner report today, and they said, oh, you know, there's these six steps, and this is what's happening inside of sales, and sales and marketing need to work closer together. But when you looked at those six steps, the top four steps were the same as they've always been, right?
Right.
Which is, as a buyer, I have an issue, a problem, something that I'm trying to do. I evaluate alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
I decide on some that will work for my organization, and then I go out and try to procure them.
Mm-hmm.
So that has not changed. What is changing, though, is that they think they can do the whole process by themselves.
Right,
Right.
right.
And a long time ago, I had my son was suffering from these headaches.
Okay.
And so, you know, we got real panicked, and you start searching Dr. Google. And so you come up with, you know, this worst case scenario, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, his poor young life is coming to an end so soon. You know, he had so much promise. We're just suffering. And then we get into the pediatrician, and the pediatrician's like, you know, back up, you know, what, how did, you know, we're like, I think we think we need a CT scan. You know, we need to stick him in the, you know, it's so sad. And she's like, hold on, back up. What's going on? How'd you come to this? Right. And let's move back up the decision process. So we had consumed all that information, right? We had started with the problem and then worked our way down through all the alternative solutions, finding the most dramatic ones and settling on this must be what's wrong with him, and this is how we should fix it.
Right.
But then getting into her, she expertly took us right back up to the top of that decision funnel and said, you know, describe the problem one more time, and then what about this, and what about this, and then, you know, we end up with, you know, drink more water and for you. It wasn't, you know, it's
you're
like,
dehydrated.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, wow. So does this happen often? And she's like, oh, you know, just anymore with Dr. Google. So I keep making these jokes about Dr. Google, but it's just, we feel like since we have all the information that we can make these great decisions.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the case. And so the change in sales is we no longer should feel like we hold all the information, but we should be great discoverers of how much information do they have and how did they end up where they're at.
Right, right.
Yeah, and then we can walk them back through it, and then maybe we have some new information or a different way to interpret it, because we do it all the time.
Yeah.
Right, and that's what I usually have to tell our salespeople, our experts, is you do this all the time. And so what you probably need to get better at is helping people make decisions, like how they make decisions. Good decisions for them, whether it's with you or not, and then get better at that, because you already have all the information. They probably have it too, but they don't know how to interpret it or filter it through the same lenses that you do. So,
well, there's real world experience. I mean, I gotta tell you, that's a hell of a story or an anecdote, because, you know, it's so true that, you know, whether it's Googling, you know, symptoms of how you feel or your kid feels, or, you know, you're looking at data relative to a marketing campaign and how you're going to sell to a marketplace. And you know, I do feel like we've got this world full of data that people just start to rely on, but there's something missing. There's like real world experience, or almost a level of common sense and rationale, like calm down, hold on, you know, and what I would suggest is true empathy, you know, in that, you know, you know, when you're out there and you're talking to people and you're doing grassroots stuff don't get me wrong, data's fantastic. I mean, but I don't think that replaces the qualitative, you know. I think that it supports it, and that sounds, I mean, it's a fascinating way, because I think it's been, you're right, I think all these people are going through self-discovery, and they don't want to see anybody, you know, they don't want you knocking on their door, sending an email or a text, and heck, I go through it every single day, to the point where I think I'm badgering people, and so, you know, you're right. You've got this group of this world that everybody's going through that they can do it themselves, yet they need someone who's living in the real world and has real world experiences and can put it all in context. But how do you get to them? So you know, that's the other challenge, right? So I completely agree with you. The challenge is, how do you connect with them and convince them that they do in fact need to sit down with you and get you involved?
Yeah, that's a big question.
I mean,
but part of it is that you kind of got to go with them, right? If we know that they're using if they're using Dr. Google to work on solutions and decide the direction that they want to go to fix their problems, we need to get better at putting information out in front of them.
Yeah.
Along the way.
Right.
So you know, the old world of, there's a company here in Omaha called, I think they're called Hayneedle now, but they got purchased at some point. But they had started out selling hammocks. And so they were working the very end of the decision process, right? If, like early AdWords, if you typed in the word hammock, they knew what you were looking for, right?
Sure.
And at the time, nobody really asked very much of the search engines except for help me find these things. And so all they needed to do to become the number one hammock seller was make every hammock available and, you know, make it easy to buy online. Anymore, a lot of the searches that we see are, you know, hows and whys and whats, where people are asking those questions, trying to figure out, you know, like, well, how do people solve this problem, or what should I do about this and that? And when you look at the content there, right, it's always interesting to find out. So, you know, my advice in general is quit trying to hide it.
Right.
If you've got deep information, get it out there. And then, right, and the one then becomes the challenge of, you know, do you have in your organization a way to tell stories in a compelling way that are informative and help people through those things? Can you not sell for a little bit,
right?
But instead become a trusted expert so they can at least get in touch with you,
right? So yeah, I agree with that, and you know, we obviously do a lot of that, Yeah, and it's, you know, it's really. I don't know if instinctually we knew it years ago, but at some point, if the world has all the technology and all the tools at their disposal to keep you at an arm's length, combined with this fact that, oh, they've got all the data or the Google world to help them go through self-discovery, you know, at some point, you're exactly right, right? I mean, by the time they come through that, it's just a... it's a bake-off, you know? Okay, now I need to find someone, and how much can you do it for? And, you know, that's not what sales is about. You know, sales is ultimately about, like you said, it's gotten to the point where it's really consultative. You know, it's you going to the doctor and them saying, calm down, relax, you know, let's you know, do a deeper dive here. And you trusting that person from the get-go, and then maybe even and that person expanding the trust. It's just really hard for people to get to that point. So what I'm sorry, it's unbelievable, but tell me about, you know, let's back up a little bit, because you know, obviously I love to hear all about the sales and that kind of stuff, but when you, so what brought you to write the book?
Well, I wrote the book based on, I have this, you can't see it, but I'm making one of these 2x2 grids. So every consultant worth his salt, right, has to have a 2x2 grid. And so in the 2x2 grid that I'm making with my hands here, the when it comes to business growth, it seems like people would come and they say what they were looking for to grow their business were new services, new products. Like, we need to do more of these. We need to offer some things new so that we can grow our business, because we're stagnant or whatever it is. You know, we feel like there's an opportunity in the marketplace. And so the very first step of the multiple steps that I walk people through, the very first one was, let's start with internally. Don't look to new products and services. Look internally. And let's make sure that we've uncovered everything that you're already working with, you know, your customers. And usually that starts with your people. So are all your people on the same page? And so that's what that book is really about. It's the first in a series of four.
Oh, cool.
So I got to get the other ones done.
Yeah.
But I got the first one done, which is how to start internally. And it's what I'd found over time was I worked for a lot of small organizations and then worked for a couple of large organizations. And they were fundamentally different, two different beasts, right? Great big organizations, you just needed, it felt like you needed compliance. If you could just get most of the people moving the right direction, good things would happen.
Right.
So, like steering the Titanic, right? There was nobody who was going to knock the thing off course exactly, right? But you could kind of, you know, so you just needed to get most people kind of going the right way, and everything would follow. But small organizations were almost the exact opposite. It was, you know, if you only had 52% of people believing in what you were saying or saying the right things, the organization would go nowhere.
Right.
So, and it was, so the first book is really kind of turning that internal marketing, or turning marketing internally, trying to get all your people on board with doing their part for business development. You know, so if you're under 250 employees, everybody should be doing something or could be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And as we started, or I started explaining that to people and then working them through it, we came up with, there was just a lot of early, easy examples. It was where new opportunities were coming and growth was occurring. Somewhat, it felt organic,
mm-hmm.
but it was really planned and trying to get everybody to do their part to tell the story of the organization.
Yeah, and so that's an interesting thing because I just was I must have wrote a blog and I was talking a little bit about, you know, innovation. And, you know, everybody's looking, you know, if you look at some of the biggest, poster, kids for innovation, like the Netflixes and the Airbnb and all that kind of, you know, we've read ad nauseum about all these, but, you know, there's this idea that, oh, well, technology can change anything. But what you're saying is, look, nothing's, you've got to start internally and there's got to be a little bit of a mindset shift that has to be worked on in terms of being able to find those opportunities. Is that right?
Yeah. That I use this acronym that I've used to keep myself on track. It's called FIT. But the F, the I, and the T stands for focus, and then individual strengths, and T is technology. Mm-hmm. And most people come to me with technology solutions.
Right.
Like, we've been trying to do this and it's not working. And we, the reason that we started using FIT is because I was like, well, you know, that's because what are you trying to do, right? This is like, let's make sure we're everybody's on board with the direction we're going,
mm-hmm.
Before we start trying to apply these tools. And then what are you doing internally to make sure that everybody who's here is applying their strengths to the work that needs to be done, and relating that to business development too.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and that's really to take into account all the people who they don't want to do anything with marketing or sales, but
right.
they're still part of the organization. And so how is it that you work them through that? Well, if they can use their strengths, they tend to find it easier to do some of these tasks. They can do some networking or talk about the company, those things. And then we can use technology on the back end to kind of lock all those gains in,
mm-hmm.
And help the organization grow.
Right.
So I don't know if I've described that well, but
very well. And I think it's extremely relevant because it's, you know, I do feel like, it's an intimidating time, especially for, you
yeah.
know, you look at our industry and you know, you have some real, let's just say mature incumbents, right? And so,
yeah.
you know, they've been around and they've seen a lot. They've seen a lot of change, but, you know, they've used basically this industrial age model for, you know, the good portion of time. And so they get a little intimidated. They don't, our world doesn't get intimidated by technology on the production side, producing, you know, stuff, whether it's ink on paper or folders or packaging or whatever. They don't get intimidated by that because it's kind of in their wheelhouse of manufacturing. And so
yeah.
a new spin on something, they're okay with that. They can still leverage their, like you said, their strengths. You know, they're able to look back and say, part of my strength is I have experience in this industry. I know how this widget worked before, and I'll this new fandangled thing. I can probably figure out too. I think they struggle on the other side, on the customer facing, on the marketing side, and they think about, you know, the model doesn't really work as much, and they get nervous about technology on that side, even if it is, you know, putting content into the world on Google and for SEO or marketing automation software, that type of thing. So, it's important. There's got to be a way to say, to stick your toe in the water, if you will, and this works perfectly. If there's an organizational focus, and then they literally, that second part, that I, is obviously a huge deal in getting people to feel a part of this, the way the boat is going, right?
Right, to at least try.
Yeah, that's
Right,
right.
it's like what is the way that you would like to try? I know how we would do it. I know how I would do it, but I need to, work with your strengths,
Right.
and so we can at least get it done. So we can move it from the unknown into the known, right? So we can, if you've never tried it before, it's always going to be intimidating.
Yeah. And there's got to be a level of transparency within the industry or within the organization, right? To say, I'm the leader and I'm coming, and not just transparency, but even vulnerability, right? That says,
yeah.
I'm coming to you. This is where we've done, we've looked at all the data. We've been around for a while. We want to grow. We want the business to continue to persevere and thrive and prosper. In order to do that, we feel like strategically we need to go here. Tactically, how do you see us getting there? Is that kind of what, you're pushing?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's this, and if this is the future that we're working into, and this is how the role we think we're going to play there, these are kind of the first steps that we think. What do you think?
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to go through this? Because the future is unknown. That's always been the challenge with growth, is you're trying to do something that hasn't been done before. So there's going to be a bunch of missteps.
Yeah.
Right? The accountants are always looking backwards. So everything is perfect because it's just data, right? The data is in the past. But trying to predict the future is always going to be a challenge. And but if we're all in this together, yeah. I mean, it really can become a nice rallying cry to...
Yeah,
to get everybody working, and it's refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
As they're working into it.
What as you get around, and I kind of asked this a little bit earlier, but what ails them? But what's your take on the future? I know that's kind of a broad question, but I always like to find out from people who are engaging with a lot of different people and small, large. I'm a guy who's always trying to look and say, what's the future hold? What's the next 5 years? What are the jobs that are going to be emerging? That type of thing.
Yeah.
What's your 10 cents on that?
This is right. The good news is I can't be wrong, right?
That's right.
Joking, actually, in the article I just wrote for you guys, the 40% number.
That's right.
There's a 40% chance that, so I can never be wrong, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, he didn't say it was guaranteed.
That's right.
Watching, especially my kids are of the age, they're just a little bit older than your daughter, right? In that mm-hmm. they're in college or just out of college.
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing how they navigate the world, I do see they have a trust in technology that I just don't have.
Right.
And so we're going to continue moving down that road. Now, I do think there'll probably be some privacy things that'll come into play that will make marketing a little bit more of a challenge versus the endless list building that we're allowed to do now,
mm-hmm.
where we can just keep gathering information on people without really telling them what it's going to be used for. But so inside, I still hold on to this, the idea that decision-making is not going to change. So if that is the case, we need to get better at taking our content experts through helping people make decisions. So when I think of sales and marketing going forward, there's this big education piece. And so my wife is teaches at the community college. And so as she talks about instructing, right, and the transfer of knowledge between her and her students, to me that becomes the future of all sales, right? She's trying to navigate online courses and offline courses and experiential learning and all these things. And I think, that's exactly the same kind of thing that we're all working on too.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to, like, if we can't get in front of our buyers, they want us through the phone, can we invite them? Like, what can we invite them to that they would actually take the time to come and listen to some new ideas?
Yeah.
So we run these events. We use the mail more, right? So we're starting to see a lot more direct mail pieces, but very customized. We're trying to pull this information out. So
mm-hmm.
I see a lot of this. It's a little bit different, but it's a lot of the same.
Yeah.
Companies are going to still, everybody's still looking for a better way to do business.
Yeah. Yeah, I really, really like this. I mean, I'm taking copious notes here. You know, regardless of the listeners, at least I'm getting some good stuff here. No, I think it's fantastic. And I think it's dead nuts on that decisions really have not changed. And we still live in a world where business is still done based on relationship, how that relationship is cultivated. You know, I look at the world of dating and you know, they do all this online dating stuff now. And,
yeah,
you know, when I grew up, that, you know, you had to, you know, kiss a lot of, you had to kiss a lot of frogs, right? Well, I was the frog, but you know, you know what I mean. And there was experience there and going through that. But it's still about finding commonality in relationships and that type of stuff. And you know, they're just the way those relationships are built has changed. And you're exactly right. So people have to be a little bit more strategic. They gotta think about how they do that. But I still believe that we're in that day and age where, in fact, maybe even more so. Like when you say direct mail is coming back, I think that's really, really cool because it says that we're almost on the other side of it now. I mean, there was so much complexity, or at least so much fear when all this technology was going crazy. We're kind of on the other side of it now where there's been so much of it that people almost are craving a little bit more connection. So,
But what's interesting is that we've kind of, so many people have forgotten how it works.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's like, what happened to the direct marketing experts? You know, a lot of them, did they just retire? Or like, but they were the original guys who were good at math.
Yeah.
they were our propeller heads who were building these, you know, these recency frequency monetization models. And, you know, with slide rules, it's the concepts are not all that much different. The tools are way different. I get it. But for the most part, you know, human beings are after the same thing. And the good news is that if we can turn some of this stuff internally, it really is a way to practice, you know, strategic selling inside of your own organization so that you go out and when you're talking to your prospects and they're saying, you know, these are the things that we're trying to accomplish as an organization, you can say, okay, of those 12 things that you're mentioning, here's three of them that we can help you with.
Yeah.
And let's help you through with these things. Knowing what we know, we can help you make a good decision.
Right.
And it's just, I don't know that, you know, do we have the patience to go through all that?
That's a very, very valid point, right? I mean, that you know, because now you come back to the corner office, is that, you know, it does take some time. You know, this technology, this techno world that we've gone through puts so much all it does is feel like, oh God, I want the answer. It's like this addiction to immediate gratification. I got to have it now. And
right.
Yeah. But nothing good in our lives ever just happened out of the blue. You know, it took, took some effort and time and that's the same way. I mean, most of these businesses that are looking for the quick answer, it took them, it took them forever to get to where they're at. You know, it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And we forget that. And so we're at this time now where that still matters. And you have to go invest and nurture in relationships. It's just like you said, it's a different way, you know? I just think that's really cool. I just thought that was fascinating how you said, you know, decisions haven't changed, but the way we get there, you know, has, you know, the way we think has changed. So that's fantastic. So, well, I don't want to tell you, but I'm not going to let you go without asking you, okay, about the legend of Mad Gringo.
The legend of Mad Gringo.
Yeah.
Okay. He dug deep in there.
I dug deep. I said, what is this? And you know, I'd like to say I read it, but I haven't. But I'm, you know, this is your chance.
I didn't know if I could actually write a book. And so then that was the book that I wrote. But a long time ago, I used to work, one of my many jobs was at a bank.
Okay.
And the right suits every day, and pins marking how many years I'd been there, polished wingtips, and I went on vacation to Mexico. And about midway through the week, I was done. I was ready to chuck it all, right?
Right.
Pulled the kids out of school. I was like, we could rent the house, we could sell the cars, we could, the kids will learn Spanish, we could wander around down here, because I could find something to do in Mexico.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a sales guy. They look like they need help. I could, we could plug in here, and I've got contacts. I could help them with all sorts of things. And my wife was the voice of reason there, where she's just like, no, we're going back to Omaha. and we're not moving to Mexico. And but anyways, as I told that story, when I got back, I was like, oh, I was so ready to quit. People were like, oh, same thing. Like, I bought a condo, for this very reason. We were going to start a bar. We were going to do all this. And da, da, da. Well, that ended up becoming, we started labeling that your inner mad gringo. So yeah. While you're on vacation, your inner mad gringo kind of takes over and is like, listen, you don't need it. Right? We can quit and we can just make it all happen. But you really don't want to be that guy.
Right, is
the reality, right? Because once you really meet the guy, and in my case, it was this guy, Ricardo, once you really start talking to him and getting his full life story, you're like, oh, the walking shirtless on the beach every day looks romantic, but wow, your life is a mess,
Yeah.
I don't really need this.
Right.
So what we should do is we should just keep our inner mad gringos at bay by wearing Hawaiian shirts. So I ended up leveraging the story into a Hawaiian shirt company from Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, no way.
Which I thought was really funny, right? The Big Island of Omaha, who we rebranded ourselves out here in the middle of the Big Island, and sold tropical shirts, and then I tried to grow that business. And so this book really does come from, I went through this long journey trying to grow that company, and in the end, killed it, and couldn't figure out why, but then when I went and worked with another company called Old Guys Rule. I don't know if you ever bumped into that brand, but the Old Guys Rule brand, they kind of did the same thing. They're t-shirts and kind of like novelty clothing. And but they had grown like 10 times. We'd started about the same time, but they were literally 10 times bigger. And I was like, what is the difference? Because it feels the exact same. Right. I didn't feel like I was executing any differently. I didn't even think that our focus was all that different. But that individual strengths is really what, over time, as I got to know their company, because they were my first consulting client, watching them and watching how they managed the entire company, I was like, oh, man, he does something completely different than I do in that, or that I was doing in that. He took advantage of everybody's individual strengths, right? So a small company where everybody was trying new things and looking for new business. On the other hand, I was dictating to everybody, this is the direction we're going. And in the between time, kind of as we tried to grow super fast, ended up alienating a lot of people along the way, customers and such. Yeah, so that's where it all came from. But we had a lot of fun with the Mad Gringo thing.
Yeah, that is
too bad. It was sad to kill it. Now it lives again. Some other guy bought the name, but like most things, it gets passed along 10 times. I have no idea who owns it now. But
yeah,
that's, for a time there, I was the Mad Gringo.
That is so great. That's awesome. Well, I mean, it's so. I mean, that's a really, really neat story. And on some level, it probably, look, that challenge, as clever as it was, and makes you better, and it's really, really,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I started bumping into other companies. I was like, no, it's like, once you get exposed to something, I was like, now that I see this, this is the mission, right? I don't want anybody else to do this to their own organization. Mm-hmm. Now what ends up happening is you get pulled into these organizations that are, super high functioning and growing and doing well, and they're the ones who are most interested in the message. But
right. Yeah.
But I'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. And it's obviously there's some other places. Look, that message resonates. You're right. I think it's I think it's really, really cool. And I think that the whole concept around fit and specifically that individual strengths, that's a big deal. And I do think
it is. Yeah.
Yeah. In our industry, for anybody who listens to this, I mean, they've traditionally said, look, this is the way we do things, but to embrace people internally, that's where the growth exists, you know? And that's really, really
yeah. Cool. And if you can, yeah, if they feel like they can apply their strengths to the work that they do, it doesn't necessarily change the work, but it certainly changes how the work is done. And then, you know, that just engages more stories. That just engages more people. And then, right, this is all branding. We're just trying to get more impressions out there so we can,
get
in front of our people so that we can tell our story and that they eventually come to us and say, you know, this is what we're thinking of doing, and we can say, how did you get there?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I'm going to walk you back through the whole thing because you were led astray somewhere along the line.
Well, you know, Greg, this has been awesome. All right, last thing before I let you go. I want shameless plug, all right? Where can they tell them about the website? Tell them where they can find you.
Yeah. So Chambers Pivot is my company name. And
okay.
So chamberspivot.com. I'm Chambers Pivot Industries, but it's Greg Chambers. I've got a weekly newsletter where I talk about things around sales. They aren't exactly like full sales and marketing, but it's all about sales and marketing.
Yeah.
In the end, I still think that's like, because it's communication, and how is it that we are interacting with each other, and that's the only way that minds get changed or value gets uncovered. So.
Yeah.
Do those things. And then if the book, The Human Being's Guide to Business Growth, A Simple Process for Unleashing the Power of Your People for Growth, is available at Business Expert Press at Amazon.com.
That's awesome. Well, I definitely appreciate it. I think that, you know, kindred spirits. I was looking forward to this. I'm really glad that you took some time to share. You and I are going to have to, you know, when I swing by Omaha, you know, we're going to have
University of Nebraska, Omaha, top one of the
great
the,
hockey,
probably at least
fantastic
top
hockey.
20.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So in fact, you know what? That's true. So we'll have to, we'll have to swing by and we'll grab a cocktail or something.
Sounds great.
All right, Greg, thanks so much, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye bye.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Greg Chambers, and I am sure that you will all agree that it's pretty inspiring to hear someone tell you that, listen, the decisions have not changed, but people think they can do it on their own, and it's our jobs to endear ourselves to them so we can get in with them and be part of the process. I think that was extremely enlightening and a great way to say something that you know, we believe in a lot, that they are going through this level of self-discovery, but in a lot of ways, like I said, they think they can do it themselves. But his story, for example, with his son and the headaches is a fantastic analogy to how we're dealing with buyers. So I just think that it was a really interesting take, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. I certainly can't thank Greg enough for being a part of it. A reminder that this episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine, was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Remember that custom content is a great way to start nurturing that process and engaging people at a different level, and getting into nurturing their relationships with their clients. So for all your custom content needs, visit www.conduit-inc.com, and I think you'll be very pleased. So once again, my thanks to Greg, my thanks to all of you for listening, and stay tuned for yet another episode of Brushstrokes. And remember to be the buffalo. Take care.